阿弥陀佛，阿弥陀佛。By all four corners, above and below, by every way, the blessings may show. May this offering expiate the errors I've made, the errors we made and continue to make. We take this moment to share love, kindness, happiness to all beings, to ourselves, to our friends, companions, to people who we don't know, the people we have animosity towards, to all sentient beings, and lastly, to all and everyone at the same time. With that being said, that is the completion of today's sitting meditation for the moment, and we should begin our talk. It is very calm in this room, and it feels so nice. Very calm, beautiful atmosphere. Get that mind to slow down a little bit from some of the anticipations maybe we've had, just because today is such a wonderful day. And today we'll be talking about a few things. I think that you guys kind of like knowing about what it's like being in the forest in Thailand and some of these other random places I kind of ended up at. So I'll continue on with that. And I thought that I would share with you some of the poems that I was writing. Let me get up on top of, all right, there we go. I thought that I would share with you some of the poems that I written, or at least one of the poems that I writ, to help me calm down when I was way out there in the mountain. I had nobody to talk to, so I had to talk to myself. I was facing a lot of problems with my meditation, and there was nobody to actually reach out to that could give me some type of reproach or some type of, you know, conversation that was going to calm my mind down from panic. I was in a remote place called Ban Thon Phuong, which is after Chiang Mai and before Chiang Rai in northern Thailand. For some of you who have traveled there, extremely, extremely remote. It took me about by car 20 minutes to get to the road. 20 minutes by car to get to the road that got me to a bus station that was taking me to a town that gets to the, take me to a town that gets me to Chiang Mai. So it was way out of my league. But the temple was lovely. The temple was so pretty, you know. It was really nice, you know, really nice. And it was so clean, crisp air. And it was, I guess to set the mood, it was something similar like you would see, if I can give the similitude of The Last Samurai. The buildings were all wood. All the buildings, the houses, they're like flat box houses. They're all wood. Crisp, fresh air. There wasn't any stores. There was only about maybe 30, less than 30 houses. And there were parts, you know, scattered about. Maybe even could have been, maybe they're all family. Literally everybody was family. And it was just plush, raw nature. As far as you could see from left, right, up and down, it was raw nature. And it was just such a paradise. It was what we would, you know, you consider that was definitely the Shangri-La, right? In the first part, it was good in the first part, right? Then after a while, you start to realize, there is nobody here. And the people who lived in the houses, they were usually elderly. The young, they went to Bangkok or Chiang Mai to work and do their thing or university. So everyone who was left in the house were the elderly. And the way it works is, since you are the outsider, you don't really go up to the elders and just strike up conversations. You know, there's codes and ethics, and you know, you don't kind of do that. You have respect for the elders, they respect for you, but as a monk, you kind of just stay in the temple. You don't go down fraternizing with the neighborhood, you know, they have their own duties, and a lot of them are farmers. So they are very busy. Their food is very frugal. They're very frugal with the food because it doesn't come in a lot. So their diet consists of bamboo, rice, and vegetable, maybe egg. And sometimes they might have maybe some wild pig inside the forest if someone goes up there and hunts chicken, eggs. And that was about it. So I would have these blockages because I'm in there trying to practice, and I'd find myself out having these outbursts. There was only two other monks in the temple, but they were old, and they had their own customs that they were used to. I didn't speak Thai that well enough to get into a deep conversation to help me calm down, or just to have a conversation, just a thorough conversation. I didn't speak Thai well enough. So this poem, which I wrote, is reflecting about me talking to me, the wise self talking to the erratic self. And I guess here we go. Here's the poem. This poem is called The Peach Tree. A young sage walking down a windy path, saw a man staring, entranced by a tree. The closer he approached the man in the tree, the man never moved nor flinched. Not an inch, not even a twitch of an eye did the sage witness. The sage asked him, "Sir, what is it that has you tightly locked into a gaze?" The man replied, "Once this tree bore the sweetest peaches of joyous pride. I used to have the best peaches from all four corners of this countryside. This tree, it was if the gods brought it down from the heaven and planted it just for me." Again, the puzzled young wise man asked, "Seemingly, sir, there's no fruits here anymore, only a past that you hold on to. The season is gone, and with it the peaches, the fruit you seem to cling to." The man responded, "But a fruit with such splendor I will wait for long. 3 years I've spent waiting for her pink flowers to sprawl. A taste so divine, as if it was nature's plan. Pink and lush, pink and lush. The peaches I had, I loved so much." Now, the young monk, with wisdom behind his years, looked gently at the tree and said, "Yet now, alas, the branches lay bare. No traces of peaches, only whispers fill the brisk air. Your peaches you desire will not return. This is a lesson that you must learn. When the season is ripe, you eat your fill. You love your peach, enjoy it while it's there. Yet known impermanence, divine wisdom aligns. Can you not see the signs from the naked tree? Enjoy when it's there, for when it is gone, enjoy when it's there, for when it goes, it'll be your last. Attachments bring sorrow, decrepitude in thought. You love your peaches, but it doesn't love you. As soon as it is consumed, it forgets about you." And that is the poem that I wrote because I spent a lot of time daydreaming about places, people, and things that brought me so much happiness, but were no longer there. I always sat a lot of time daydreaming. I wish I was here. I wish I was there. I wish that person was with me now. And it was stopping me from deepening my meditation and understanding how to apply the Dharma in the present moment. Because I was not living. I was not living for now. I was living for a past that's gone. I was living for a person that wasn't there anymore. I was staring at this imagination tree, waiting for it to come back and to heal my broken heart, to heal my traumas, and nothing was happening except for me wasting time. I sat there and just wasted so much time. Not only did I waste a lot of time, I was not seeing the beauty of the present moment by building a new tree, sorry, planting a new tree, despising all of the nature that is around me, despising all the trees that are there at the present moment, and my unwillingness to try the fruits of other trees. So the wise man in this poem kind of represents the shadow me, both of us together. And let me go up here, scroll up a little bit. So I used to have the best peaches from all four corners. From a Dharma eye, this is called Sakyaditi, or the view of self tied to past experiences. We've done that a lot. I think we do that a lot. We daydream about our kids when they were young, past experiences with our spouses, a job that we used to have, a house that we used to belong to that is very partial to our favors or partial to our life. And we always sit there and use that to compare to what we have now. Instead of fixing what we have now to make it our paradise, we turn our paradise into a form of bondage or like a hell realm. It doesn't really have to be that way, but we have to use clear discernment and clear sight to see that when it is time to indulge or engage in the fruits of our labor, we eat it when it's there, we consume it, we get the nutrition at that moment. But when it is gone, it is gone. And accept that it is gone. It doesn't mean it's not going to come back. It means it's not there at the present moment. So the Dharma is to accept it when it is there and when it is gone. Don't remorse. And don't crave for it to come again. I was meditating one day. And I was meditating in Chiang Rai somewhere in some temple. And I had a really profound breakthrough in my meditation. It was awesome. It felt wonderful. You know, I felt that I had a lot of clarity. It was probably the most strongest effect of my meditation that I had. And now I understand the reason why that happened was it was so profound that all the meditations afterwards, for some short time, I just kept trying to compare and get back to that last meditation session. And the harder I pushed myself to go deep into meditation or deep into the jhanas or just to absorb myself in that moment of meditation, the quicker I kicked me out of meditation. The five hindrances they came faster. The hindrances of a meditator, they start to manifest faster. I couldn't sit in meditation longer also, because there was too much anxiousness to be in this state of, I don't even know what to call that, but it was just some state of meditative awareness. And it took a while for me to realize that. So eating the fruit when it's there, consuming the fruit of your labor when it's there is all right. But when it is gone, you still need to plow your own field of Dharma development, or cultivate your land of Dharma preparation. So therefore you can have an orchard, not just one tree. You killed all the trees in your orchard for one tree. That's what I was doing. And I found out, that's not, that isn't what, I just, I just cultivated a desert. It's pretty hot and dry in there. So, we know that the Dharma is not for the sake of memory or views or conceit. It's for release. And we said that yesterday that it's supposed to be a pleasure. It is supposed to be a place where you feel safe. It's your sanctuary. Meditation is supposed to be your sanctuary, where you can fully experience yourself without feeling like you are your own enemy. You are your own villain. You're supposed to use this time to develop yourself. You're supposed to give. You're supposed to replenish yourself with the practice, not take away from you. What you want to let go of is the wrong view. What you want to let go of are the incorrect thoughts that are stopping you from liberation or negative karma and aversions. Alas, the branches lay bare. This man was sitting there staring at this tree. It was an empty tree, not even any leaves on it. He was just imagining everything, sitting there wasting time, as if he believed that he's going to live forever. The time is gone. You have to cultivate now. You have to cultivate now and prepare. He sat there 1 to 2 to 3 years every day coming to look at this tree. And the sage walked by him and looked and was like, "What are you looking at?" It's an old tree. He knew it exactly when he saw it. He looked at that man and said, "That tree has no fruit on it. Are you not afraid to look left and right? You see, there's so many trees out here. You're stuck on this one here." He asked him clearly. And the only thing he could retort was, "Well, a few years ago, I had something that was so tasty, so good, so sweet." It almost bullied. He daydreamed about the taste of this peach so much, he was so delusional about the taste of this peach, he thought that the divine, the gods, came down and gave it to him. That's called delusion. That is a strong reach and grasp for something delusional. When you ruminate on something for so long, you start to delete all of the things that probably were no good about the tree, the worms inside the peaches, or the ants that are climbing on the tree. He deleted all of that. That's rumination. So the sage was looking at him just like, "You're in a, I don't know if you realize it, but you're in a real state." But he, of course, the sage is not going to tell him that. But he's trying to get him to realize on his own, you're in a kerfuffle. You're in a state of affairs. But you don't realize it. Alas, the branches lay bare. This is the manifestation of anicca, which is impermanence. We know about that. We've heard about that so many times. It's right there in living color. How seasons of joy come and go, and clinging to their return is a cause of suffering. This man cannot even continue with his duties on his life. He can't continue with his normal duties. We see and we hear that a lot. We see and we hear it a lot here. When I came back to America as a big boy, mom is talking to me still like I was a baby. I love my mom. "Please, mom, I swear to God, I am not saying nothing bad. I know you're watching. I am not saying anything crazy. I swear, I promise." But my mom, I love her very much. I'm her baby. A little bigger, but I'm the baby, right? So It kind of reminds me of the way that she views me and the reality of me. That I'm not a child anymore. So there are certain things that you're going to have to accept. I know it's hard, it's not easy, you're a child, right? But you're going to have to accept that there is a type of change that happens. She won't let me drive the car. I want to drive the car. I've been driving everywhere in every country. I got a license. She still won't let me drive the car. And her driving has not gotten any better. Okay, it's starting to freak me out. When you get in the car, I'm just like, oh man, just like, I'm starting to grab the handles a little too tight. And she won't let me drive for her. But she's living in a world where, she's looking at that tree with peaches on it. But I have to be able to express and tell her in a way that doesn't belittle her feelings or make her feel invalid. Oh, what time are we supposed to? 10:30, right? 10:30? Okay. I'll just finish. I'll wrap up. Well, there is a sutta, Bandipapama. I don't know how to say that one that well. Finna-panidupama sutta. Form is like foam on a river, fleeting, void, and unsubstantial. Just like the peaches bloom and fall, all the phenomena are momentary. The wise person doesn't grip the foam nor the fallen fruit. And I think that's pretty strong. Strong analogy here that it's really helpful that we are living in an era that we can actually even accept these type of concepts. And it's weird because you hear all these pseudosciences and maybe even some therapists, they use Dharma terminology, but they don't want to give reference back to where it even comes from. Okay, the Buddha was talking about a lot of these things that we're dealing with the personality, their character, personality, I don't know all the terminology for them, the personality traits, he was already talking about a long time ago. And I think that because we are lucky and we are willing to listen to the Buddha, we don't have to pay for therapy. We don't have to pay for therapy like that. We've had our therapist, and he was the top therapist. It is the Lord Buddha and his Sangha. It says, with a clear mind, you'll be able to figure out everything that's going in inside of you, and also out your outer world as well. You can recognize it just like that. You haven't been able to realize your practice. When somebody has outbursts, you don't get all angry. You know the problem is automatically. There's clinging, there's attachments to the past, there's reaching for the future, there is unacceptance to accept the present moment, there's wanting things that are not accessible, or what is accessible, not accepting it. You can see it clear. But the other person can't. But you're just like, wow, the practice is actually really working. That is something that a lot of people just don't have the gift of having. This last part before I let us go on a small break, it says 3 years he spent waiting. Here we see moha, which is delusion, the fog of restlessness. That fog of restlessness is where a being waits for past seasons to return instead of seeing the reality before them. We can also see this with our dealings and handling with our friends and our family and the people around us. We overlook their present moment, their interactions with us now, because we're anticipating what they can be, what they could be. We think that, you know, we fall in love with the potential of a person instead of what they're showing us at the moment right now. We just completely skip over the red flags. Yeah, but this person has the potential. Yeah, but the potential is not what's getting you paid, is it? It's dealing with them right now. That's what you have to work with, not imaginary peaches. And we get burnt out of the shape. We get burnt out of shape when we get burnt up. Well, how is that in regard to our practice at the moment? We're dealing with right now, not what's in the future. There is no future. The future starts right now. I'm very guilty of that, especially in the past, maybe even right now. I see a person. I love people. I love people. People are awesome. But I have to realize and I have to remember, because I love people, I can't love this false delusion of what they could be when they're showing you who they are right now. You're doing them a disservice, because now you put them on a pedestal that they might not even be ready to be on in the first place. And when they wobble off the pedestal, that friendship is going to be teetering off into all types of chaos. But at the first place, I was the person that put them up there in the first place. They didn't ask. They just came to you as a regular person. The Kalakarama Sutta says that the Tathagata, the Buddha, does not chase after the past, nor chase after the future. He doesn't chase after either one. We know the future and the past doesn't take place except for in the present moment right now anyway. Every moment you wait for yesterday, you miss the Dharma happening now. I want to be enlightened right now. I want to realize the Dharma right now. And I want my heart to be filled with that at the present moment. Not yesterday, that's gone. Not in the future, I want it right now. So with that being said, we'll take a small break. Let you guys stretch your feet. This is the last day, so we're going to try to make it our best. So go ahead and will we do walking meditation right now? Is that the... Let us do some walking meditation. 30-minute walking meditation right now. I'll prepare some more stuff. Thank you guys for listening to my poem, by the way. I appreciate that. Sadhu, 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 amitabha. We'll take a break.